interrupting the current neo-Ukronial, climate-changed, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting Episode BTWRLM 531, and remember, being free is not a spectator sport. So you know the drill. Get you behind the woodshed. You have to do something. Well, you don't have to. Nobody has to do anything. You just be puppet people, I guess, or cricket people, or whatever else they want to make you, as we don't get together as a populace and stand up. Speaking of those parasites, oh, no, not the government ones, the real insect ones. I guess they're messing with Texas and Florida. Malaria cases in Texas and Florida are the first U.S. spread since 2003, CDC says. So you know what I looked at was that date. I wonder, did they have a malaria jab that they patented back in 2003, right when they did that spike protein? Well, I don't know. I didn't go check. But you know you can't trust these guys anymore. They're parasites too. But they're speaking about something that's serious. So I don't want to dismiss this thing. But malaria is not something you want to mess with. Although, they say the treatments are all right. Didn't look into all those. I want to point out, just be aware. I guess forewarned is forearmed for y'all. Why only those two states? But is it also tied to this condition, or the El Nino, where we have this expansion of heat that comes up from the equator and causes this ability for these parasites to show up? They're saying that this is endemic there. It's starting right there. I don't even know how. But anyway, so we have a Florida malaria alert, a release of genetic modified mosquitoes. As I reminded myself again, as you hear about this stuff, you can't divorce the thoughts, really, about how this might happen. How is it originating there? Remember, Bill Gates was instrumental in making these supposed GMO skeeters that were not supposed to be able to allow the species to propagate. And they found out quickly that, boy, nature's tough. Nature will find a way. And then you wonder about the consequences. However, malaria is caused by a parasite. And there's an interesting disinformation going on one way or the other. I would say you jump forward to this and find out about this. I don't know how serious this becomes. And it happened once before. So I think it happens before Gates and his mosquito philanthropy. But you'll see, I noticed I picked up this genetically modified mosquito malaria alert. And then in the discussion, they talk about Reuters fact-checking this claim. And the video shows genetically modified mosquitoes with barcodes that has been released by Bill Gates as false, because the video actually showed aphids. That was a bigger story to me, that we're such an ignorant populace that we don't know the difference between an aphid and a mosquito to start with. Now, I know most of you know the difference. What I'm saying is this is what's playing. This is what's in our society. We don't know whether people understand that this is an aphid or not. So we don't know what people actually pick up on. Can you imagine people walk out to their garden when they saw that aphid? They didn't know that it wasn't a mosquito, let alone the particular type of mosquito it has to be. So what are they doing? Man, this was before 2003, it seemed to me. It was before what Bill Gates was doing. And so I wondered, well, what is Bill Gates is doing? And apparently their website, thegatesfoundation.org, says to beat mosquitoes, researchers must think like a mosquito. And that was pretty fascinating to me. You got to think like a mosquito. And then we have this guy, Gates, doing investing. And you got to be careful on these stories. He doesn't actually do it himself and all these other stories that pop out. But he does put his money forward. He does give energy to it. And we see him involved with Gavi and what they did through Kobe Swindle. You realize he's thinking like a mosquito pretty consistently, or jabbing everybody, or paying to help people get jabbed and promoting population control as well. An interesting little website. Mosquitoes are smarter than most people realize. They have 4 well-developed senses, sight, smell, taste, and hearing, and a capacity for making decisions and an ability to develop flavor preferences. That means that in the battle against malaria, it helps to think like a mosquito. Okay, I'll just say mosquito. How do mosquitoes find their victims? Sight. Mosquitoes have to be close to you to see you, typically 1 to 2 meters. Smell. Higher CO2 concentrations make groups of people more attractive. The mosquitoes sense chemicals like lactic acid, dimethyl sulfide, and acetone. Alcohol breaks down into lactic acid, so drinking makes you smell delicious. What I found interesting was this other one, the second one, smell. Higher CO2 concentrations, which means if the Bill Gates is into, and all these psychopaths are into getting rid of CO2, if there's less and less CO2 in the atmosphere, you become a bigger target to the mosquito. As Bill Gates starts investing in mosquitoes, he claims is supposed to be neutralized, supposed to end the species, not create a more virile second generation to come after you with their parasite. And that if he reduces the carbon dioxide, then these jab machines could actually target you more easily, Vince. And so I just find this interesting how these people may be thinking this through, thinking like a mosquito and what's going on. I remember now, too, the broker, the global broker for this, the WHO, the WHO, not the rock group, the owl, or the little people, the WHO, but the World Health Organization, recommends groundbreaking malaria vaccine for children at risk. Just the children. The historic RTS-SAS01 recommendation can reinvigorate the fight against malaria. Doesn't cure it, but just reinvigorates a fight. And so I'm going to stop here. I don't want to get too much into this. Just understand that these are just, they just did this last year as Florida and messing with Texas here. This vaccine, so-called, only for kids, I guess. And we saw what they've done with these vaccines. I don't know how anybody can actually trust a lot of this anymore. And then how do you into the future? Is what I told you would happen. They're going to, actually, if you are objectively looking at this, they're destroying our ability to trust the medical profession. And there are certain things that the medical profession can do. And so this is another, again, these attack vulnerabilities are very critical to start to see. And where do you place yourself in all this? But the WHO recommends something. They also recommended that there was a pandemic, which was a fraud. They recommended a jab juice that was the software of life. But they're thinking like a mosquito, and they know they got to get you by jabbing you, which I told you partly in the jab was the vector was the jab at warp speed. And anybody who took that would be getting the novel bioweapon. It couldn't be until they had an isolate of a virus. There's no possibility to have a vax. So they claim they find the parasite for this. They claim that this vax is supposed to stop them, and I want to remind us, this is all, again, not medical advice. We have to be knowledgeable. Remember, ivermectin has a way to interfere with the biological processes of a lot of these parasites. And I'm not saying to go do that. I don't know what's going to help in malaria. You'll have to study that. I haven't studied this. But the point is now we have this potential El Nino effect that's maybe bringing up into northern, more northern areas. The parasite for this, it may be natural. How it originates there over all this time without always infecting somebody has always been an interest to me, but not since 2003. And so I'm going to, unless I can be, I didn't have the time to check if someone can show there was actually Gates philanthropy, being a philanthropath by investing before 2003 and substantially more time before that into malaria mosquitoes, then we're looking at a breakover here. It happens before. It'd be interesting to find out how it does. But it's happening now. And now, magically, the WHO has this vaccine. So, be aware. It's not something to mess with. But we also know that the WHO, not the rock group or the owl or the little people of WHOville, but what purports to be a health organization, a global health organization, you would think would just give people good advice. And in some regard, you can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. They'll give us information that is substantial that we need to know. They were one of the organizations that originally listed ivermectin hydroxychloroquine as almost miracle drugs for what they do. There's a medical regime that it has to go through and in a certain way for certain things. But parasites seem to be high on the list of the cures that these things do. So why we see this coming up and then we see the WHO, the WHO coming through and saying, here, we have a vaccine, is instead of these other more inexpensive and more universally used devices, drugs, is pretty interesting to me as we move this thing along. My question is, where is it starting? How did it even get started? How do we know it's not part of this thing? You're going to see a lot of the system will say it's not what Bill Gates and Gavi and all these UNs is doing. But the problem for me on all that, why are they always involved in these areas that become the problem? You'd think that they'd be looking at that from their own self-preservation at some level and saying, this is at least bad optics. the problem is that we keep looking at what the deeds of these organizations are and where the problems crop up, and we find someone's telling us the former WHO advisor sounds the alarm over pandemic treaty proposals. And this is an ongoing thing, and I'm going to repeat it periodically because it is an important thing. You can get involved right now, as I've suggested that you can, likely your senators, because that's the representative offshore to other organizations. How they have authority to look at the WHO as a valid organization, I don't know. Maybe some of you that do the research can figure it out. The senator shouldn't even talk to this organization because the authority is actually in board to the states. And if you don't have representatives and senators that understand that, they're likely going to go over across jurisdictional real quick and think that they have authorities that they don't have a clue about. And what I'm trying to say is you don't start targeting Bill Gates and Gavi for being bad or the WHO being bad. You just say that they can't go there. They're just nothing in those authorities. There's no authority in them relative to law. And then we get away from arguing whether or not Gates is a philanthropath using thinking like a mosquito, coming after you with his jab to depopulate the earth. In a seminal discussion before the Pandemic Response and Recovery All-Parliamentary Group, APPG, in the UK, leading health experts raised serious concerns over the World Health Organization's WHO proposed pandemic treaty and the amendments to the International Health Regulation, IHR. The treaty would grant the WHO surveillance and censorship powers. And that's the least of it. And so those of you that are feeling that the Covey swindle was important and you were affected, maybe it's time to step up and listen to what I've said in the past on how you at least start, get you on the path, and then do your dive, put your skill to it, bring your talent to this matter and your charm, because you're going to have to talk to people, but they have to be convinced of what you're saying. You don't overwhelm them, I can tell you that. You bring it methodically, but you get involved to help stop this. That it's unlawful doesn't mean that it can't be put in. And this is one of the big stories this week. The injustice in this country, United States, under the cover that we do justice, is just mind-boggling. But this is a warning in the UK now. So not just in the United States. You know, UK, I'm not quite sure what you have to protect yourself. You have to, again, research it for yourself. United States, we have this separation of powers between the feds and the states and the reservation of powers, and the only granted powers to the feds. So we can use that. And we heard in the IHR 2005, the reservation the United States made, which was absolutely what they should have made, to the states. That caused a global uproar, which shows you how close the world, the globe, is into being taken over by an organization, a usurper like the WHO. And so this is a serious issue. Don't know what more to say than to you on a general broadcast, because some of you aren't interested. But some of you that are, I'm asking you to go ahead and roll your sleeves up and don't tarry too long on this. Again, there's no state inside the state. The state has no power itself. Where we have a reservation, and I don't know how you're going to do this outside the country of the United States, but look for it. You may find the reservation for them to decide for you extra-jurisdictionally. No state has the power, jurisdiction, or authority to globalize private health needs or necessities or bring them into threat or scrutiny by anyone outside the privity, your health privity, and a strict consent either, unfettered as well, by deception. Again, we have to look at that of any sort. The state itself doesn't have this power to globalize anything. Certainly your senator cannot. Certainly the WHO can't insist. And so this is a different step of a threat that I've been talking about that I'm offering now. The decision to go with this would actually give up your privity with your health matters. And there's no power in the states to allow that. So this threat itself, just this thing we're looking at, is a crime. And I don't know if people appreciate that. Just the fact that this exists to be considered is a crime against everybody. And I say every one of you listening and maybe never listen, this is how they work this. And until you step up, I've said before, if you can stop it before it gets going, much, much, much better. Because after a while, if they get it in, it's much, much more difficult. And we're going to touch on this. But moving on right for the moment, to another blood-sucking parasite, relative to the WHO, relative to the government capitulation, the try to make a treaty. We know the WHO is a broker of HARMA, appease or silent. I want to point out this parasite, this blood-sucking parasite, from Merck to Microsoft. These are the companies that BlackRock controls in quotes, controls the most of. And we can see the extent of what these investment bankers, if you will, these people that are essentially running the show, that are in the news now. It's not. It's obvious now what's going on. I guess they had the right. They rose to the top because there's nothing much left as they monopolize the system. A week after an employee of the world's largest asset management company, BlackRock, described how the company attempts to stay out of the media spotlight while buying politicians or profiting off war, according to an undercover footage obtained by O'Keefe Media Group, we thought it worth a look at just what companies does the 34-year-old company have the most control of. And so we can go through and look at this expansion. I'm just bringing this to your attention. These are the global parasites that work to take advantage behind the scenes. They don't want to be called out, obviously, but these are the people that help to guide the people that are the philanthropists. These are philanthropists some as well, but you see they take a different tack, and they control from behind. And they're not even the controllers, but these are the main. This starts becoming up through that pinnacle pyramid point of power in the world. And so this article goes through a little bit of this. It shows you that BlackRock is part of this. When you find out Merck is part of this and you see what they did in Covey swindle, none of these people backed off. None of these, you didn't hear the Fink back off of the harm that was being caused in Covey swindle at all. You see them back off ESGs. I talked about this. I'll bring this back up. BlackRock's Larry Fink says he is done using term ESG amid growing backlash. There was another report that starts this and says BlackRock CEO Larry Fink says he's ashamed of ESG. ESGs are the sustainable development goals, essentially, in a policy consideration, which you will be subject to when you go to see CBDCs. That's the liability of the one offering you the CBDC and your token citizenship. Larry Fink is backing off that term. An article says he was ashamed, but he comes back and says, I'm not ashamed. What he does point out is that this ESG has been weaponized. And this is the thing, you start listening what's going on. He can't be, he's the front end of an investment brokerage system. Fink said ESG as a concept has been weaponized and blamed the extremes of the right and the left for generating an uproar. There's a lot in these stories that I guess if people were, I knew where people were really interested, we could probably go through. But I want you to point out, I want you to start looking at some of these. What it looks like and what people start doing can affect these folks. That they'll even back off on the branding of things. And these ESGs became important. The implement was a weapon. Well, that's the problem. He says they've been weaponized. I want you to remember, all this stuff is sustainable development vectors of attack. And the ESGs are one of those weapons in this continuing climate change, not the weather, the political climate change that moves moneyed powers into better power and position and control. He says it's been weaponized, but he knows it's a weapon already. And so this is an interesting psychological statement. He's saying, well, we're backing up because it's been weaponized. What you think is that someone else is doing it. No. The way it was made is that this is the weapon. And so he can't be identified with it. Well, for his profit and the future investments. And so what you're causing as you do the uproar, those of you that do, and I say do it as factual and through the law as you can, because that's the authority. You get to speak with authority, not through opinion. You're now causing these moneyed people to have to shift. They're not backing off. You look very carefully at these stories. He's not backing off this. He just can't be identified. He throws out there that it's being weaponized by the left and the right. Like he's somewhere in the middle. In fact, he's not even in the political spectrum. And you're what he calls you weaponizing this, those of you that do, is not. He's the one who's wielding the weapon. They used this stuff in order to get investment over the last few years until now it's starting to look tainted because of maybe. Not that I'm on the left or the right, but someone like myself that would call it out, have been calling it out before it was an ESG. Remember, that ESG is just a recent iteration of the sustainable goals. They've now packaged it together. They've constructed it in a way that all these corporations are going to be compliant, and this is the obligation they have. And when you go to use their services, you are speaking through their obligation. And they have the right, by the way, this world is being set up to have no property, they have the right to deny you. Now, he can't be on the side that it is exposed that he's wielding a weapon, so he'll turn around and say that you're now causing it to be a weapon. In fact, it's a weapon. And this is all caused by creating a question by somebody stepping up in this area. In an apparent culture war victory for conservatives, BlackRock CEO Larry Fink says he's throwing the towel on ESG, environmental, social, and governance policies in a name at least as a result of the effective pushback against attempts to buy large asset managers such as BlackRock to force the adoption of woke standards that wouldn't otherwise be achievable through the democratic process. Now, there is no democratic process in any of these situations. They're foreign to everything in the United States that I can see. All their processes are. They are what I talk about. They exist as a presumption of right, and you need to know your savings clause protection is how ingrained this is. That I don't agree with the description of these issues here, but they do focus us. There's a dynamic working that you can be a part of to stop these folks over time. This is going to take a lot longer. There's very few people that understand how this process works. I can address most of this when it comes my way in a fairly summary way. It's just being able to know and identify it. And then know where to stand or how to eliminate their ability to have authority. It's how we say challenge jurisdiction. That's exactly the first thing you need to do. How do you have this authority? How is this relevant? This ESG is relevant in the United States of America. Then you need to know in another step is how it is actually a violation. It's actually diminishing us. Now, these folks in private, the public-private partnerships understand, these folks are using these weapons, and when they get caught, they call them weaponized, and they make you the bad guy, so to speak. But if you move to the law, he can't say it's a weapon. You can then show that that was an intrusion, but he's in private capacity. He isn't beholden to the same standard, and this is the other trick about how they pulled this off. This is why it went to public-private partnerships. The private is not beholden, and you're seeing even the FBI. Oh, I can go to a private party to get all this information. I can't get through normal channel. It would preclude me from getting it. So if you start getting this in your mind, you start understanding how this thing works. The parasites here, the philanthropists, are figuring out how to go about through the system to be invisible to remedies to you and to also engender itself to a system that gets, if you will, the taxpayer to pay for things. That's leveraged funding. And this is all building up this fraudulent system on top of it all, where they went to fiat and they went to these toxic debts that they then, this is fraud that they monetize, and then insurance on that they monetize. And it becomes this movement of these funds. It's all this ESG is about the economic attack. If you think, again, climate change is not about the weather. It's political. Politics is economics. We see that in Agenda 2030. And I don't want to get off too far in all that. I've talked about all this before. But in the news right now, we're seeing the tips of the icebergs is actually submerged most of the time, has been rising to our awareness. And they're now whining about the fact and having to do maneuvers around what people are doing. As I said, I don't necessarily agree with the characterization in some of the articles, but if you do a bit of study, you can work that through for yourself. Don't buy into the narrative. You can identify what the truth is and move with the truth of it. I don't ever try to do a narrative, so I don't know how it would apply to me, but I'm just saying that you don't know, as we do this, when the more we learn, the more we can discern what people are saying. Typically, I haven't found anybody that would find fault with what I do, so I just continue moving along what I understand, also in the explaining of it. So this is a serious threat to us. It's an economic threat. Unless you have a unique, separate system of financing yourself and monetizing yourself, you're going to be subject to all this in the world. Because what they're doing, the attack in the back end of all these, they look like they're using the laws, and people think that the law is being accomplished through their trusted and faithful representative. But you saw in Kobe Swindle, that's not at all the case, and they use private organizations to pull this off. There's this problem here. And look at the world, how easy it was to pull off against most of it. So ESGs are a weapon. It forces this political climate change, and it destroys whatever you thought was life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness or property before you can then be happy. The pursuit of happiness was supposed to be about property, but you hear that they want to get rid of property. They want to make it so that you are an investor somewhere, somehow, or not. You're cut out. And so they're attacking your basic foundation of your life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, which is property. This is the core treason. And these companies in the United States and multinationals have learned and are exploiting this whole weakness in our system. And we understand, we can see the proof of what I've been saying about the economic nature of this, not the politics. They use those as avenues to get at other things. We see it in a report here, kind of interesting, where these things pop up. A Swiss-based NGO, again, non-governmental organization. You'll even see non-governmental organizations mentioned in Title 42, 1981, where they say your rights are extortions of every time. Your equal rights under the 14th Amendment are extortions of every kind. And there's a prohibition against non-governmental organizations removing that. Go look for that. It's important. It's really fascinating what's out there to see. But a Swiss-based NGO, not a government, a non-government organization, was allegedly working against Russia's economic interests. Russia's prosecutor general on Wednesday declared the Worldwide Fund and for Nature, WWF, one of the pinnacle predators in this ESG, the sustainable destruction of your life. WWF, also known as the World Wildlife Fund, Russia found them undesirable. Moscow accused the Switzerland-based nonprofit of working on behalf of the U.S. against Russia's economic and security interests, especially in the Arctic. These front NGOs are used to affect your economic and security interests. What do I talk about? Your economic and your national security. They use that as an excuse. The very thing that he claims to be used as a weapon is a weapon. The very thing that they use to attack your economic force and effect as a people is a national security risk. But do they recognize that in you? No. Russia recognized environmental NGO to be an economic risk to them and a national security risk to them because of that. So I found this fascinating, very interesting to me. It's there. People don't talk about it like this, it seems, and I think that we missed the point. It's Greta. Yeah, it's Greta. But I made her little E in her name, I made that like a monetary unit. These people are just fronts for an economic attack. And the black rocks, the parasite black rocks, and the philanthropists of the world prey on all that. And it's going to take us to understand that in more proper ways than what I see. Not just toss it off as something we notice is wrong and shrug our shoulders because now that we've identified it's good enough. No, the pressure, the concerted pressure is causing these parasites to squirm. So we're going to have to be essentially our own vaccine, our own antidote. And these NGOs are critical to understand what part they play in an economic hit. So when you look at your EPA in the United States or anybody who goes after the policy, it's like a CDC for the globe. In other words, it's the standard. The EPA is making policy. They're the pillar of the ESGs, the Sustainable Development Goals, in those three areas under ESG standards. There's others. So I thought, when they talk about it in this article, you read, they talked about it, they're put in under the pretext of preserving the environment, the WWF is carrying out activities aimed at preventing the implementation of Russian policies for the industrial development and exploration of natural resources in Arctic. This is an environmental group. I thought in the environment and educational studies, the WWF claims to be for climate change or the ESG scores weren't supposed to be about economics. Or is it, as I've been saying it is? Or is it, folks? Look very carefully at what the news gives us notice about. It's important that we orient ourselves to the real attack. And so when you see your economic system being destroyed, chewed up, and all these malfactors involved in doing so, you're under attack. You're not going to escape that part since your life, one of the primary focuses in your life is your monetary system, how you go about the world, how you buy things, how you get things. And despite all this economic calamity that we're told, these existential threats, by whatever reason they'll make up, Sweden dumps climate agenda, scraps green energy targets. Maybe some sanity coming to the world, folks. I've been a long time coming. I'm going to suggest because one country starts to do this, and even if some others follow, they're not getting rid of the underlying cancer that still sits there You see, it's not about the environment, so it doesn't matter what the governments change in their in the energy sector. The cancer still sits there to eat away at you. The black rocks are not going away. The compromised politicians, the philanthropists that think like mosquitoes, they inject themselves into your life and then they inject you with whatever they think is the best thing to do what? Make more money. Get rid of the competition. Make the world their utopia. You don't have a say. Well, you have a say, but it's an inactive say in a way. Your non-consent, which is not an action at first, and then it turns into your resistance and how you go about that, which can be as simple as we're seeing the destruction of one another tool, the cultural tool, the Bud Light. You just stop buying their product. And you see, the consumers are seeing that's powerful. And so people get excited. They get empowered with that. They feel their power. That's only a small bit of it. But you see, it's all economics. Sweden has just dealt a severe blow to the globalist climate agenda by scrapping its green energy targets. In a statement announcing the new policy, the Swedish Parliament Finance Minister Elisabeth Svantesson warned that the Scandinavian nation needs a stable energy system. So I'm going to end right there. That's what energy in a modern society, if I use the word modern without being too tainted, needs. What you're looking at in this current energy systems and the choices and utilities and public utilities is to make that system stable and 100% consistent as much as you possibly can. And so these green, if you call them green, they're not green at all. Nothing about them is green. Again, that's a weapon. Get you to believe it is, and then they can run their BlackRock scams and investments and everything. You require your leverage funding to subsidize it all. The first time you see subsidies, you should be asking, there's a problem here. There either has to be a great public need for something for a subsidy, or you're watching a scam anymore. This is that leverage funding. But they're finding out in Sweden, these targets are interfering with their duty as a government to provide the people with consistent energy. And we've lost that in the world somewhere. I don't know where these folks decided that they could lose this whole point. But why you privatize it? Because those private corporate energy corporations promise to provide power adequately. They promised to provide to the public what the public needed in power, and then we can move that on over into the internet, in communication, and any other thing like that. When they privatize it, if it's not an outright obligation, it's implied that they're not supposed to mess with you. We're not supposed to be messing with Texas. We're supposed to be free of all that. Not being free means we're under attack. We're not living in peace. We're certain means there's no law. There's either no law or we're not enforcing that law. As I've said, the law brings peace. Certainly for land disposal. It certainly brings a method, a way to analyze when there's a challenge. But here we have Sweden deals a severe blow to globalist climate change. Again, globalist climate change is not about the weather. It's global political change. You watch that happen in Covey Swindle, whether you recognized that or not. I hope people are putting this together. It's really the same thing, kind of boring in a way, but they're taking us out with it. So it's your life. This is literally how your life is going to play out. Some of you might make it out before you see any of this. And some of you won't. A lot of you won't. There's a lot more people in the world, a lot of young people that are starting to see it. But unless we start to help those youngsters come up as they're starting to understand the world, I certainly didn't understand the world. I believed everything I was told. And it slowly was having to be beat out of me over time that maybe I wasn't told right. Shows you how much I knew. Probably why I see what I do now. But just this giant insult that's gone on, and we gave over to those people that promised to help keep us all because it was all involved with keeping our nation right. We thought those people were. Yeah, we understood there was a bit of corruption here and there, but we didn't think that it was literally the entirety. We're seeing the evidence of it now, and want to acknowledge these evidences of the why. Why would Sweden be able to announce this? They've been paying attention, apparently. Remember when NASA acknowledged climate change occurs because changes in Earth's solar orbit, not because of SUVs and fossil fuels? Here we are again, nature. The system is set up in these ways. There's nothing perfect, even in the perfection of the creation, which I've always had a problem with the idea. It doesn't matter. It's not perfect. It's got some very interesting natural things that go on. things that we still don't understand. But for more than 60 years, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, NASA, has known that the changes occurring in planetary weather patterns are completely natural and normal. But the space agency, for whatever reason, has chosen to let the man-made, that's Michael man-made, up global warming hoax persist and spread to the detriment of human freedom, not the detriment of mankind. When mankind steps up, I think we're going to see some change. Stop being the human animal that they treat you and why they could think they could do it. This is, again, a reminder. Federal agencies have lost their way. This is not, again, about the science. Everyone wants to say, oh, this is about the science. Remember, he just said that because ESGs have been weaponized, and I told you, no, it was set up. It's a weapon itself that he got caught holding. Same thing here. These are weapons themselves that the federal agencies are wielding. And it's not less in the states here. This is my problem with a lot of this as well. You don't have anybody stepping up in the states. No, they embrace the federal oppression, usurpation. Again, they call it climate change. We're not talking about the weather. It's about political climate changing. But those of you that don't realize that and think that there's no nature and think that there's anthropomorphism that's causing all this, disregarding everything else, folks, there's a fungus among us. Fascinating what nature has in store. What it's already there, like we don't even understand it, and yet we find it out. Climate scientists have discovered, folks. Climate scientists. See, climate scientists, we don't even know who those folks are anymore. Are they the climate change scientists? Are they, which are not scientists? Those are fraudsters. Those are people who are in a religion that they're trying to convince you their God's better than your God, even if you don't have a God. Climate scientists have discovered that fungi, discovered that fungi store huge amounts of carbon dioxide in them each year, equivalent to 13.1 billion tons of carbon dioxide, which compares to a third of the emissions from burning fossil fuels. I don't even want to go with the accuracy of those numbers. How do they know? Nobody has perfect knowledge on what's out there. I do, in doing research about these fungi, they're in about every soil there is. There are some that are as large as states and across borders. They're interactive. They're interrelated. They engage with the forest itself. They're in the ground. And I don't know how they make up these numbers about what it stores. They forget the dynamic system that might be going on. But we found out, climate scientists just figured out there's a carbon sink in the ground and it's natural. Again, these gals in the science, the so-called climate science, don't have this in their model. There's a problem. Two problems. One is that they haven't figured out that it's not about anthropomorphism. And they also have found out that a balanced system from which this material that we make fossil fuel from, we're told, came from the Earth itself is a natural part of the system. It was here once before. And these biological systems grew up in that ability to live. That when they cut out this gas, you're going to kill off some amount of this biology. Moving on. Nature is pretty cool. Fun guys out there. Sucking up carbon. Yeah, exhaling oxygen. You think about that one too. Yeah? Well, no, Greta doesn't. Those ESG folks don't. To believe in ESG, you are not in a natural mind. I'll just say it that way, because it's a political hit. It's not about nature. Environment is the weapon. Oh, I'm weaponizing environment to say, oh, here, it's here to protect us. The fake. Antarctic ice shelf grew by over 5,000 square kilometers over the last decade to prove the point that it's not about anything we see in the weather. It's all about how we utilize the perception management to make people believe in their ignorance that what I'm saying is, not me, but is an agenda religion promoter to gain control because I'm thinking like a mosquito. You know, I've got a ton of money that I can go spend now that I've made every dollar to be fraudulent. I can work on people's minds to make more money. I don't know why they do that, but anyway. At some point, you'd think there'd be enough. But while scientists around the world mull the prospects of global warming, those are not scientists, but let me go. While scientists around the world mull the prospects of global warming and its potential effect on the climate, it appears that the amount of ice at the frozen continent of Antarctica has been increasing over the last several years. And this is just a short look. This is not looking at anything real long, right? This report's even myopic a bit, but it is increasing, contrary to the so-called scientists. It doesn't matter that most scientists don't look at ice buildup, but it doesn't matter. But I got to stay off my island. I guess I should give that warning. Nobody is, but stay off my island. More ice, folks. Natural systems working, oscillating through their different possible. I'm sure it's going to go back down at some point. It may continue to go up. I'm kind of waiting for what we were told early on. I don't think that saying that there was a cold coming, like an ice age, although they didn't say it was going to be that deep, is coming, is out of the picture still. There's still evidence that it could come through. I'm not holding my breath, certainly. But if it does, and the northern half and the southern half starts to get colder over time, there's a little bit of evidence that that is going on. Especially when you see a little bit of ice increasing at the Antarctic. That's going to drive the cold, and it's going to drive population naturally. And all these ESG types are going to be utilizing that to try and exploit you. To understand these natural dynamics is to understand the ability to protect yourself. Don't shrug your shoulders and say, oh, this is about climate change anymore. I'm trying to show you the tools that you can use in order to protect yourself, to not, and then maybe take a sense of worry about it in your mind. And I know a lot of folks that would listen to me aren't worried about climate change in the sense of the weather. I'm telling you the real existential threat is that it's not about the weather. And these folks have their fingers and their tentacles everywhere in your life already. So global warming, folks, is warming. But Antarctica is not listening. A little bit more ice. Why Sweden may have just jettisoned their green targets. They turned and said, wow, we have to have stable power. And if you go back to the United States, where that's what's really supposed to happen, you have to sit down with your obligation and duty as a government, as an official, and see, can we, in the sense of actual problem that came from the 70s and recognizing man pollutes and we need to stop the pollution. What these existential alarmists did is they adopted, said that everything was an existential threat because a man was creating everything was a pollutant. That was the conflation. But there was a pollution problem. So if we confine it to the pollution, and then we apply the duties and obligations to the government in the sense of energy to provide a stable source so that we can rely on it. Emergencies happen when there's no power. We can rely on it. Then we look and say, well, how much of it, where's that risk that we don't affect, that we can still reduce some of the pollution? How do we do that? Is a rational approach to the needs and demands of society, which was abandoned by all these ESG types. It's now ESG, it's sustainability goals that are imposed by a non-governmental organization globally. So I wanted you to look at, it's not just, oh, Sweden is jettisoning the green. There's an obligation that they're actually having to adhere, a higher obligation. And we should be insisting on those higher obligations as we move forward. And then once we have that handled, if there's a way to clean things up a little bit, make things more efficient, then we ought to do it. I have no problem with that. Why would we want to mess up our air when we really didn't have to? But we can't do it at the expense of the underlying obligation and duty of the government to protect everybody in what they need. In this case, energy, if we're talking that way. So with all this reality about Sweden jettisoning the greens, and we see that there's a dynamic world out there that's oscillating in its function and growing ice and carbon dioxide can be sinked into the fungus among us and the ocean sucks it up and releases it as it needs to. You know, this interesting dynamic system. It's a wonder why these extraterritorial criminals, these governance criminals in the EU, want to probe blocking the sun.
What?
Yes, EU to probe blocking the sun. Brussels is assessing the viability of massive geoengineering interventions, according to the agency. The European Union is joining an international scheme to investigate whether major interventions in the Earth's natural processes, including deflecting some of the sun's rays, can help mitigate climate change, Bloomberg reported on Monday. These people are insane. Did you hear all that, folks? Natural processes? The very processes that they deny in fabricating climate change? The sun, by definition, does not exist in these folks' view. They're not supposed to see it. Uh-oh, folks. I think they listened behind the woodshed. Remember, I was just talking about that device that beamed power from space down onto the Earth. And I said, well, maybe they should tie that together and they should make a block, a shield, and then they could get the sun's energy and then beam it through right down to the Earth so we would block the sun and get power from it. I think they took that serious, folks. EU to probe blocking the sun. These people are absolutely critical to understand their psychopathy. This is a governing body over a group of nations in Europe. They actually believe that they want to look at this and assessing it at all. Their climate change does not recognize the sun, the very sun they want to deflect. You understand that? That insanity. See, when you see that climate change is political, if I can block out the sun, I can cause people to have to do certain things, right? I can threaten them. I can also charge them lots of money. I don't know why. I don't know what the money is, but it becomes this servitude. It's expensive as well. But anyway, this is the insanity. The insanity of people denying natural processes and saying we got to control those very same processes. This is not an opinion about not embracing sustainability. Climate change is the weapon that the Fink would say is being weaponized by you. Because by me, by telling you this. It's bad optics for them when they're trying to make money and exploit and extort from people. That doesn't happen if you're not there to make that present and open for people to see. So, EU psychopaths are looking to assess to block that sun. I think they listen behind the woodshed and they think, well, we can make some money on this microwave beam power now that's viable. That's not what I meant, folks. You know, that was a joke. They don't understand jokes, I guess. Contributing to death of life, it's official, folks. Epstein didn't kill himself. He had help. We have the official record now. These people, I don't understand. I just can't shake my head about what people do in the world anymore. DOJ watchdog, misconduct, negligence led to Epstein suicide. Just go down through the little part that I caught. Shows you he didn't kill himself. Nope, he had help. Horowitz, the investigator here, identified 13 employees with performance failures that contributed to Epstein's death, including 4 employees who recommended be criminally charged. So, this is your prison system, whatever we think about Epstein. Certainly now we have its official, folks. He didn't kill himself, but omission here is culpable when interfering with someone's rights or property, the same rights and property that these same climate change folks would deny to you, the same that would be denied to you by these compromised officials, one character of which was heavy into that would be this Epstein character, maybe why he didn't kill himself. He had help. And we hear, based in all that, and all the corruption we're seeing anymore, it seems to have no accountability to it in any regard either, is the other astonishing thing, don't you think? Lots of people calling for it, but nothing's still happening. But J.P. Morgan settles Epstein lawsuit. The bank was accused of facilitating a notorious pedophile sex trafficking operation, and they had to settle against civil. And they were going to pay the backside. They have enough money. They just keep printing it out, right? They just keep making. They're the one of the pinnacle predators in this world. J.P. Morgan Chase announced on Monday that it had reached a settlement with one of Jeffrey Epstein's victims, who had accused the bank of profiting from his sex trafficking operation and allowing him to make payments to his victims. Nuff said, officially, he didn't kill himself, he was had help. And it was the omission to do lawful duties. And don't underestimate the joke there to negate more that you're looking at an inhumane prison system. People that you may have had, you don't, I know my listeners don't have any faith in these folks, but the society at large says that these officials in these systems, these institutions, are doing the best work they can. It's the best we got. And I've always had a problem with hearing the system say it's the best we got. And speaking of compromising and compromised politicians, interesting little story here as we move into an election cycle. Trying to package yourself. Branding here, folks. Brandoning, I think this would be. Bidenomics. Campaign branding conceals deep economic weaknesses. Probably one of the most compromised politician I've ever seen in my life now. He's been here as long as I've been alive to listen to all this stuff. An economist told Sputnik that while the economy is performing well enough at the moment for it to be a political liability for the Democrats, its appearances conceal some deep-seated weaknesses that constantly threaten to trigger a downturn, terming the promotion that Biden is moving Bidenomics. And so they're packaging this perception management, they're packing this as something good. And right now, though the people are feeling a bit strained, the government numbers that are like epidemiology, they're the cooked books, is showing these politicians to be doing well enough. Don't forget the tidal wave starts to show up within another year, not now. Maybe just after this election cycle. But Bidenomics, making up a brand, brandoning his economic achievements. Well, we just talked about everything that the administration allows in sustainability, ESGs, environmental concerns, is an economic attack on your system. That when you expose it, the rats, finks, run and try to distance themselves, even though they're character will suggest they're not embarrassed about doing it. They're just not going to promote that they do it. Now, what we're looking in Bidenomics, the brandoning of Bidenomics here, should be reconceived, and we've reframed what seemed to come to me was Bidenomics is unstable feeblenomics. And so maybe if we could start to be creative about what they tried to brand this thing to pass by people who aren't paying attention, the mass of people, which puts them in office. And we start to do like them, if you will. It's a meme in a way. His character that we see stumbling around everywhere, his mental defects, it's not that I'm being political here. I'm saying these people cannot continue to be in the places that control our lives. That what we might want to call his Bidenomics is feeblenomics, speaking also to his capacity. Who that brings into office, I don't know. We're kind of subject to, everyone wants to go to the lesser of three or four evils. I don't know how to stop that one. But we certainly cannot let people that are willing to promote, as a commercial concern, brandoning, an economic condition that he has no control over, that even we'll hear the Fed has no control over, that is driven by the movers and shakers behind the scenes, like a BlackRock, who once found out, will distance themselves from the very weapon that they've been wielding against you, are not the people that can be in power anymore, and we're going to have to think as a people how we're going to get at it. This issue relative to this economics, this is the tip of an economic iceberg, it seems. The ship of state is driving us into the people and the families are already struggling due to the massive deficit spending. High inflation we see, high credit card interest rates, which you really kind of got to get off that anyway, but these unbearable mortgage rates as they move on, as we move through the record high food, and somehow that doesn't meet the interest rate issue. And gas prices, well, gas is taken away from them computing, but all these prices are rising. Well, they go up and down, but I mean, your purchasing power is interfered with secretly. And then we also know about the fabricated supply shortage, planned or not. that are also already pushing pressure on the people and the families is being put down, that is, they're epidemiologically found to be non-existent. Their problem's non-existent relative to Bidenomics saying, oh, everything's fine. And it's not. And if you look, listen carefully, they don't have a control of this, actually. And if they did, they've controlled it essentially off the cliff. It can get a lot worse than today. We're having troubles today already. What he calls Bidenomics, how great it is. But reality is, it's not so cool. And it can get worse. And so I bring up some things to reorient where this can go. I said this is a tsunami coming. And I'm not an expert on all this, but it seems to make sense. Don't position yourself where the tsunami is going to hit. Well, you better get your surfboard and better surf that tsunami, as I've said over decades. But here we have some examples of where this could be going, what isn't like the past, and we're all involved in it, regardless of what they do. Think inflation is bad now, let's take a step back to the 70s. And that brought up for me the past, and boy, oh boy, we saw some stuff then that was over a 10-year period, little one, coming through, watching a can of gas going from 15 cents a gallon, maybe, or 25 cents a gallon, and then jumping to 50 cents a gallon, then to 99 cents, and then $1.25, and then $1.99. All just after the time they removed gold out of the system. We weren't only just looking at a few percent, 5, 6% interest rates, or mortgage rates at 6, 7%. We were looking at them going into 12 and 13%, and mortgage rates going to 20%. I remember making phone calls to lenders. He had to do it by the minute because the mortgage rates were changing that fast and going up. Just phenomenal. And so some of us have lived through that time that it can get a lot worse. And those of us that haven't seen that don't know about that. And there's a problem, psychological problem. If you haven't experienced that, you're more susceptible to it because you won't respond to it. You think everything's okay and good enough, and you like we did, like I did when I was younger, believed in those around you that were so-called adults that had something to tell us that we thought their experience was helpful, that they wanted to do best for us. And I got lulled into that because I had some teachers that were that way. They took our best talents and helped them. They enabled us to move forward on these ideas. The harder you worked, the better you went, right? Your dreams could be attained. That's not what happened right after this period of 73, 74, 75. And it was a lot worse, and yet we made it through. It's the other thing. But we're facing something that can get a lot worse in a position now that starts already in the stinking abyss. Federal Reserve boss faces dilemma with the U.S. economy not out of the woods. Attempts to control inflation at the expense of growth could be driving the U.S. towards stagflation. Now, it's been debated on what that is. The 70s was stagflation. We're looking at something else. Here, Gerald Schlimply said it was dragflation. I don't know what names we can put on this. This is not a thing we wanted to see. We should have seen. If these people were actually managing the economy correctly, they probably wouldn't went to fiat. That means that was a setup. They wouldn't have taken us off the gold standard. That means that was a setup. Now, we're here today, and I can't see how it's any better. I don't know if you can use the words of the past, but it gets worse. It was stagflation then, and we're in a worse position, and we're already just getting here, and it can get worse, and they don't even know what to do. Dr. Linwood Taheed, Associate Professor of Economics at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, and former President of the National Economics Association, argues that the government must intervene to revive the country's fortunes. The U.S. Federal Reserve cannot fix America's economic problems by tinkering with its only tool of interest rates. An economist argues Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell is torn between conflicting pressure to control inflation and to get the economy growing again following the COVID-19 lockdown and the energy crisis caused by sanctions on Russia. That's spitting into the hurricane I told you about right there. How come these geniuses can't see forward? How come they didn't notice that COVID-19 was a fraud? It was a weapon itself against the economy and you. Everything's against you, ultimately. Don't think you're not there. Even if you didn't agree, we're all going to be affected by this in some regard. But he's torn. He's not torn. But he's also not in control, because all he has is admitted here that they only have interest rates, and it can't go anywhere. So we got to take cognizance of what's going on. When they're talking economic, they're talking the implementation and successful implementation of all these weapons that Fink tells you is putting against him because he got caught. He was holding the weapon. It's been removed from him by outing he had a weapon, and yet it's still the only thing he can use. So he distances himself, puts himself in the background again. He's gotten too public. And these folks continue. This is a non-governmental organization in these people as well, in their private ownership in these organizations that we call monetary federal policy things. They're instrumentalities, but they're not publicly owned that way. They all have private back behind the scenes interests. So if he's having trouble and they only have one, they've proven they've mismanaged this thing. It wasn't ever supposed to happen, folks. Go read what the 1913 Fed was about. Go read it. Until we had depressions and stuff after that. We're not paying attention. So my thought here, if they can't do it. We're done. We're over. It's all, we don't need to see more. Let it all fly away, folks, and the Fed. Not be so easy to do, but we need, to, as people, to understand it needs to be changed and work toward getting that changed. Not to end the Fed like you flick it off by a switch. There has to be some transitioning that goes on, and we have to be prepared in our minds about how that would work. Because they're going to drag this out to cause the extension of your suffering to go on and on and on as long as they can. Because as long as they're not called out for causing it, there's no accountability. They continue to eat. They prosper. They go up. The society doesn't even stratify. It separates, and the wealthiest get so-called wealthier in a system that everyone's so deluded they think that that debt is something valuable. Understand that, too. We're dealing in a debt system that the more you have, somehow you become some rich pinnacle to be looked up to and invested in, like the Fink will tell you. He doesn't want to identify as someone who would be interfering with that. FDIC accidentally reveals the bailout recipients. In this fiasco, in these things, in the setup for the takedown, in the monopolization of the finance banking system, we now hear the FDIC, the supposedly insurance, your $250,000 was your accounts were protected amount of money in there. You couldn't have more. That's what I've been told all my life. You don't put more than $250,000, it won't be protected. Well, I haven't had a bank account for a year, so it's irrelevant. But the point is that's what they tell us. And then we see this bailout recipients. The U.S. agency gave $1 billion to the world's top venture capital firm and $900 million to a Chinese tech firm, among others. Well, they got theirs, and it's certainly a whole lot more than $250,000, isn't it? Is exactly the point and the problem. The United States Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation accidentally, why is it an accident here as well? Accidentally released the identities of Silicon Valley Bank clients, and it bailed out following the bank's collapse in March. In response to the Freedom of Information Act request, see, they're powerful. They can get you information. What you do about it, I don't know, but we get, at least get knowledgeable. Upon realizing their mistake, the FDIC reportedly pleaded with Bloomberg to destroy the client list, claiming it had meant to partially redact some details because the document included confidential commercial and financial information. I think anything that's stealing from a taxpayer underneath the color of managing an economic trust breach is a crime. Myself, I don't know about you all. But here we have where the money went, where so-called money, where these people, where cash gets shoved, as they set up for in 2008 would happen, that everyone in the United States that had an account was put under threat of having to go through these processes, and the money is just handed to the big players. It's not a system that I think we should continue to agree with. And what allows this is this fiat system. What allows this is the Fed pretending it can manage when it has no clue what it's doing, that it would possibly self-regulate, as I understand. If I understand this, even in the most basic sense that comes to me to try and grasp, this wouldn't be a problem if people use gold and silver. Now, you want to play games with the paper? That's for somebody who wants to get in that business. But the people should have been separate and protected. Again, your money's not supposed to be invested and toyed with. It should be a stable form that you can rely on. What's the big problem in the 70s? Notice 73, 74, and 75 was not 71. It takes about a year or a year and a half before we see the onslaught of a problem that they've created. And the way they respond, they have few tools, ostensibly make it legal to legalize the things that they can do. They don't have much control. They even create these nonsensical policies that allow them to do this money-shifting process to make it look like dollars are in motion, and the dollars are bucks. They're not no dollars at all. It's a fancy magic show. And yet, if people were to say no, finally, and insist on something stable, if what I've talked about in the past, and I'm hesitant because I don't really understand some of it, but it sure seems when I look at stable money, gold or silver coin, well, I may not make a profit on that, but my purchasing value never changes over time. And I've talked about this for a long time. My purchasing power doesn't change. I'm not making money and profit investment, wagering my money in a bank system. No, I just want money that has the same purchasing power. And gold and silver coin does that. Should be what our society and the people everywhere actually demand. It's not just America. Muslim companies, the countries, their religion says that they should deal in only dinar, which is gold, I think. And there's a wisdom in that. But the FDIC shows that the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, how did they expand the $250,000 to hand a Chinese tech firm $900 million? That's another almost billion. That they terrorize the American people with their loss, and in that loss, go ahead and then exploit and thieve, plunder that population that they're supposed to be sitting here and protecting is not a response that you'd expect from someone who cared about you. And we see a little evidence of, again, this is all this sustainable stuff inside, this eventual technocratic control, how to take down societies over time. Moving on over to more direct responses to this economic downturn. What could happen coming in, folks, as we go into this problem? Plan to save downtown San Francisco from doom loop approved by lawmakers. The loop o' doom, folks. And I looked at this story and what's their answer? Folks, what's their answer? People, businesses are moving out of downtown. Companies are bailing outside of, getting out. You want to find out what bailing out some? They're bailing out of San Francisco. Now you can look, it's not what the local commissioners are doing. It was California policy. It's embracing the federal policy. It's not isolating itself like it should to protect its own people. The San Francisco Board of Supervisors on Tuesday approved legislation that aims to shore up the city's beleaguered downtown by filling empty storefronts and expediting the conversion of underused office buildings into housing. That's their plan. The only thing they can do is underwrite the use change. Now, I want to ask you something, folks. Well, your economy in the United States typically is driven by small business. And you have business being driven out of your downtown. As a board supervisor, do you think making housing is going to drive your economy in the future? Or are you part of an agenda that's actually driving you the economy down into the future, and you're doing stack 'em and pack 'em houses to get people consistent and closer to your control? If this is their only answer, why did they go to the point that instead of not letting their businesses flee by arresting everybody that on the bottom floor that steals all those companies blind, as the economy was destroying the commercial properties because businesses can't afford to stay there, they didn't address it then. How is giving subsidy to build housing going to save that place? You're going to have to explain that one to me. I don't see it. But this is the answer when you have people running agendas that aren't looking out and aren't really looking into our future, that we're noticing, if we didn't notice before, that our governments have become. It's another form of the bailout, but the problem is those that were paying your bills bailed first. And now you think you're doing some good to bring housing a feel-good issue. I'm bringing housing in the face of a homeless condition that happened because I did considerations at the state level that caused all that. Remember, COVID was causing this. Now we see the federal is balancing, trying to figure out how to respond to the COVID swindle. No one looked ahead to protect us. To me, 100%, no jurisdiction did this, is a plan against you. It's in the system already. And this is also global. So how do smart, intelligent people do? They bail. And we see that countries are bailing out of another threat to our future as far as the United States and this dollar thing that they keep adjusting because it's fiat. It's been turned and weaponized. It should have never been weaponized. The best hope it had would never be weaponized. Because, see, gold and silver money, specie, cannot be weaponized. But they didn't not go there. The U.S. promoting world to turn away from the dollar, IMF official. More countries are shifting to national currencies and trade. Washington has created conditions that force countries worldwide to search for alternatives to the United States dollar. Russian representatives at the Internal Monetary Fund, the IMF, told RIA Novosti on Monday. The United States policies are driving people away. They now see that there's a threat to the countries now, which I've talked about before. Just wanted to point out, this is what's coming on the future for Americans in their economic. You think their economic hardship now? Watch as all these things start to build up into that tsunami energy to create the tsunami that's going to crash upon this country unless some novel things start to happen. Part of that's going to be you understanding not to stay on the beach. Don't be around the beaches. Move out the way. We see foreign countries looking and saying the U.S. dollar's forcing us away. That's another way to bail out, no different than the companies that can't continue to make a profit bailed out of San Francisco. This is a different type of bailout. This is a more effective bailout. What's the bailout as well? Go somewhere else, do something else, transplant to a place that's more secure. This is what's going on with Russia and the BRICS and all. But remember, that's still weaponized. This is how multi-layered this deception is. But we can take where these nations go into, they give lip service to this BRICS basket of currency, gold supported. It's not really, part of it is, but it's still paper, it's still fiat system. Nations can do this on a mercantile sense to get transactions between countries for goods being and services being rendered. But as far as an internal monetary policy, there really shouldn't be a policy. It should be a factual specie that you use. We wouldn't see that in this country. We wouldn't be affected by it. And we'd be watching and probably almost immediately return everybody into, well, you want to speculate bad? There is no bailout because there's no money. See, the people aren't paying in specie. You're not paying taxes. If you got that. Only the people that are legal entities pay taxes. And so it's itself a supporting system in that regard, and policy has to be made differently. But the people are insulated. But it's not going their way. This whole change, as I've said, even though it looks like, well, the countries are bailing, but they're bailing into a global system, as I've identified for you. I don't embrace Russia for this secret, if you will, open secret, that they're causing. They're leading it, actually, as I've pointed out to you. Everybody in Russia is going right into this digital situation. Russia embraces sustainability. China embraces sustainability. I've talked about the pivot to China. It wasn't military. That was the front. That was the cover. This was about shifting the whole world over into moving into this technocratic future. And it's embraced by the UN, which China and Russia embrace. They want to go to the UN. We've heard about this news. I keep bringing this up to show you how closed system this still is, even though we see so-called strife and people can't seem to get together. What it is people are, they're moving, they see the train bearing down on them and they were standing on the track. They're going to get off that track like I've been asking you to do, but your answer is going to be a slight bit different because where they're going, and you have to adopt something back, I say don't adopt it, just reclaim the thing, the tangible thing that you would work with people on because the intangible is what they use to defeat you. United Nations policy brief talks of a digital ID linked to your bank account. So the truth of what I've been talking about, the direction that they were saying they were going, the things that people wouldn't agree with me on in the Bitcoin, which I was looking at as the token citizenship before. Again, I'm not against the digital currency as a medium of exchange of value if it stays private. And there's a couple processes, there's a couple that are out there that look like they might. I just don't trust the technology at this point, and I don't necessarily trust the hardware it runs on, and maybe even less so as we move along into putting AI in your systems, back doors and all this other stuff. However, this is a debit card. I don't see a problem with being able to use electronic money, but it shouldn't be your electronic funds transfer. It's not your money, though. It's a way we can trust the payments can be transferred. The United Nations doesn't work on that point. The United Nations policy brief talks on digital ID linked to your bank account. This is what I pointed out. This goes back into the BIS, the Bank of International Settlements. They want to know every penny that you're doing. We know that the digital ID linked to your bank account is what I said backwards was this CBDC, right? It's all still here. It's now being acknowledged in this report. You can read it. United Nations, or at least to some of the United Nations effectively pulling the strings, must feel that they are falling behind with pushing controversial IDs like digital ID compared to the likes of the World Economic Forum, even if they're pushing in the same direction. And now we have the UN making a case of not only introducing digital IDs, but also making sure central authorities link them with people's bank accounts and mobile bank accounts. And so it's, again, they're just, the notice to us is right here. It's not really hard. It used to be that people couldn't really see this. They couldn't see the future. It really wasn't seeing the future, though. Just read and apply what they were telling you, and you would, if you will, see the future they want. And nobody, and here's why you know you can do that, because no one is stepping up. And I say that in a general sense. We're still deer in the headlights. We're still on the train tracks, looking the wrong direction as the on-time train has actually sped up and maybe come in here a little bit sooner, and it's going to hit us blindsided. IMF is working on global central bank digital currency platform. It's not just your central bank now, it's the IMF. This, as I was saying, is coming. It's just being admitted. And a part of this, it's kind of interesting in that first story, they're saying, the WEF is being found out, and so like the Fink saying, I'm going to bail on the ESGs, I'm not going to really abandon them, but I'm going to stop branding myself with them. The UN has to step in to make it look like the WEF has nothing to do with it. And it's all the similar players. They're just all agents, change agents of the same cause. The apparent here, in parentheses, an advent of central digital currencies, CBDCs, in various countries around the world might be a once-in-a-lifetime chance for the IMF fund to move from influencing individual lives and sometimes all but financially controlling their governments and economies to do it much more directly. This is stated in the wrong perception. It's the truth, but it's not as an advantage. This was the plan. And so I want to point out that even though someone's writing to identify it, they think it's like an opportunity that was, just coming on. How long have I told you that the BRICS SDR, this basket of currency, was the future for these underdeveloped countries? That is simply going to go into a digital system that'll be controllable. This is not working, they're taking opportunity. This is the plan being executed. So again, as I may use these links to show you that the notice is here, I may not embrace exactly how the expression is. And some of you that do the study may not either. But I'm not really talking to some of you either in a way that you already understand. I'm trying to say we need to get the word out, and here's how we can explain to people that may not quite get it, that their lives are in jeopardy. It's an economic hit. They're going to do it by all these stalking horses, whatever name you want to put on them, as we talk climate change or global warming, whatever they want to talk about. Malaria, although that's could be have a natural thing, but the COVID swindle, right? It's fabricated stalking horses to get you to focus on that instead of what they're doing. And what they're doing is not really who's running the show and who's running the show behind that. These guys are ahead of us big time, fast, and we see them telling us. And now we see their rides, and I tell you, go after the duties and obligations. This guy now speaks in that context, a usurper speaking to grab onto the authority that should be in people. It's in people, and they believe it, but it's not properly placed. Where he says, this French bank governor says, it's, quote,
very probably our duty to issue a CBDC. If you don't understand the danger of that statement, when I say you go after their duty, they're now claiming it. They're claiming to put the weapon to your head. They have the duty to put the weapon to your head. In a speech on the future of the European banking landscape, François Villeroy de Gallou, I guess. Sorry to the French-speaking folks. I'm sorry I didn't really get into that language. The governor of the Banque de France emphasized the inevitability of a digital euro. Inevitability. The Constitution of the United States says specie money. It doesn't sound too inevitable to me. We can move. We can allow ourselves to adopt things that are harmful to us. But he was addressing commercial bankers at the Global Office Institutions Conference organized by BNP Paribas on June 22nd. The governor shifted his focus towards the concept of central bank digital currency, CBDC, for the euro. He raised the question, as everything is becoming digital, why should central bank money be the only thing to remain in paper? Labeling the digital euro as cash plus, he asserted that this would essentially be akin to a digital bank note, while its usage would be optional, he argued, for its significance in the growing digital economy, especially e-commerce. Understand who he's talking to? Well, the money behind that, understand he says it's akin to digital bank note. Bank note is on paper, as fiat as that is, but it's a bank note. It's on paper. We're not fiat is as money. We're as money. I told you they're backing you off of even how close, even tangibly, how you would be utilizing this medium. And he's telling you, if you keep abandoning this, the need of the digital need is going to allow us to do this. But they're taking it on as a cause. It's a duty now to impose it. Because paper has been shown that it's not effective anymore to keep them from knowing about you. It's actually ineffective for them to do that. You know, Kobe Swindle, a part of that was to make money dirty, dirtier than it had already been. Oh, those drug-infested dollars and bucks. Oh, no, now they made him an existential health threat. If you watch that go through, is moving this guy where now they're saying it's a duty that I do this for you. As crickets, as we sit by, watch, our rights get destroyed. We, by our silence, get adopted in. And some of this is a problem because maybe we don't know how to address it. I hope I bring quite a few things to give us more options. There's some things I don't even know how to approach. But it doesn't mean that they don't need to be fixed. And I don't have omniscience. I don't have a perception that's beyond my limited scope. So there's other people out there, I'm sure, that have a better expertise. I'm hoping, I guess. That's all I have because I don't have it myself. All of us are kind of like that. These folks are telling us that they're not taking it on a duty to come to harm you with their tools. Because why not, folks? You're going to abandon cash, and you are. And that's why I say you got to even keep the fiat now, because they're going to as fiat. As a digital bank, that's not any of that. You can't. That's an oxymoron. You can't have a note, a bank note, a piece of paper, being digital. You have evidence that there's a note. It's an image. What they're doing to you, all this digital stuff is a persona in digital form. It's not you. Don't ever forget what they're doing here, why they can translate it out. And because for that benefit, you're now beholden to them and their obligations they claim. ESGs. So we've been pressed upon laws or policies that have been worked and not challenged. When they affect us, we may not be available to be able to understand how to challenge. The system is really kind of distant from any one of us, it seems. There's been niches of professionals, the supposed professionalism, that specialization that we can't touch. One of the areas of that has been the law. You got to have a bar member, this and that and the other. It's a bar association system. I've come to find out that they're committing treason against us. They're usurpers. They are only use the rules when it affects them. We all know this this injustice in the system. One of my core problems is, again, it's the best system that we have. I've suggested that these policies and these laws need to have highest level scrutiny actual judicial scrutiny before they get put implemented, because the harm that comes down after them, the irreparable harm to society, has been underappreciated. I think we get that news today as we watch these non-governmental agencies come in and do this on a global scale. Inside the country, we've had another type of cancer, this irreparable injustice. Harms that happen that will never see justice. They're irreparable forever, that I would have thought early on should never happen, that we would put more time to not have happen. That the ability for something to exist that's wrong in society over decades, to now change the society to what it is and then implement itself again back, is a serious problem. It's why one of my criticisms of the properly decided abortion revocation of Roe versus Wade, but that it was done way too late. We have another one of those stories. 50 years, the society has changed. Then you remind people that authority should have never been removed from the states. And you have this outrage that comes from society showing how ignorant it is. Is this problem here where more directly, because it affects anybody who was involved, we have a new thing, and I didn't realize how internalized my anger, if you will, is. I'm realizing you can get angry, but it doesn't really do you any good. And in this case, it's 50 years late. This next story just reminds me of how bad it is over time. We allow this stuff in and we don't vigorously fight it or challenge it, but we allow systems to ignore what appears to be facial irresponsibility, unconstitutionality, harm, a reverse crime, if you will, in this case. And then this story just comes out here breaking that I didn't realize how I'm still thinking about it. Because I was a victim. I don't want to be victim status. You move on in some regards, but it sure got me to thinking. SCOTUS rules race-based college admissions violate the 14th Amendment, ending affirmative action. We allow all this non-governmental nonsense to come on as all these policy considerations as law, and it starts working. We end up going through 50 years of irreparable harm to people that got affected by a law and a rule before our judiciary can touch it. Is the kind of world I'm telling you don't want relative to all these policy considerations, not law, the digital currencies, the token citizenship, that you have to engage right now. Because if they come in and they make law, it's going to take at least 50 years to get fixed, if it can. Because when you go to SCOTUS, you're dealing with a small fraction of a small window of people that actually got in to all the other harms that are out there. SCOTUS rules race-based college admission violate the 14th Amendment, ending affirmative action. I'm tossed on how much to talk about this because it's private to me. I was directly affected, notwithstanding the dissent I heard going off in that was put up against this decision, that somehow some of these women, in other words, as well, that was surprising, not surprising, but I'm just saying, universally the women denounced this decision. That I don't understand how you get to the Supreme Court and watch a policy and underlying laws reverse discriminate in a country that said it would not discriminate at all, and find that removing that reverse discrimination is wrong. Are three justices that should not be in that capacity, and also show you why, part of the reason why, bad laws, bad policy that waits 50 years to get removed is an irreparable harm that these justices sitting there that said that it was wrong prove they aren't ready to be at the Supreme Court to make any decisions if you give it any credit at all. I have so many, I don't even know what the word is. They're not questions. So many crossover problems about this situation, the way this works. It's akin to putting a woman in jail on crimes that they never, ever did, that took years and decades to figure out that they, in fact, never did it because the system was either too lazy, too incompetent, too procedurally obstructed to get to justice. The main thing about the Supreme Court in the United States now is it's an equity court. It doesn't have a limitation that we hear. Well, we can only refer to the question before us. When they see an injustice, they're supposed to be looking out over the effect of the country. They shouldn't wait. I say shouldn't. I think there's a policy that they're supposed to look over the country as they do their other jobs, as the court cases come before them, and look to see and do an independent review whether or not these issues should continue, even though they haven't been brought before them on a case. They have an equity power to check, immediately check the excesses of another branch. I'm just talking here, folks. I studied a while back. I've walked away from all that without more interest. It's kind of, it just doesn't go anywhere. You're sitting here stewing in your problem. But this affirmative affirmative action, and I don't know how much more I'm going to say than this. This is a correct removal. This was a reverse discrimination. This had nothing to do with the discrimination that they were talking about. When they made policy that was based on the color of our skin, that was a violation of the intent of what the 14th Amendment was about in trying to remove that. Understand, I also have the parallel thought that none of us, every one of us, I should say, is colored by this imposition, the 14th Amendment. And if you don't think so, I've been saying this for decades, go read 42 U.S.C. 1981 and see it relates to white citizens and the freed people that abandoned their freedom were given protection to be brought in equal to the white citizen whose rights are to suffer exactions, extortion, wrongful extortion of every kind and no other. Go read for that. That's your equal rights. None of us are not colored under the law. And so when you look at that, when I look at this Kenjai woman, totally has no comprehension of what she's talking about. But notwithstanding that, affirmative action caused me to not be able to go and to preclude me in the very universities that Jackson says that other people were excluded from. It didn't just deny what Robert said, denied some of the higher learning. I was excluded from all, if you will, higher learning, and that's a loaded term. I was excluded in my intention to go to where I wanted to, which is, like I told you, it's science, it was oceanography, at a time when at the sciences, I just found out, was number two level of knowledge and capacity in people of the United States at the time I was through. Didn't know that. Just recently found that out. Math, we were number one. I was honors. I was invited to go to scientific state competitions. Our team, my friend and myself got invited. There was only two in our team against high schools that were teams of five and six. I've told you a little bit about that. And we did really well. They thought we cheated for as well as we did until they analyzed our tests and found out my friend, who was different, had a different strength than I did. He was really into math, did math really well. Not me so much, not that I didn't do bad, but I just didn't do it at the level that he did at all. That we answered on these tests different questions correctly. And they realized that we couldn't have been cheating. And this is in a position where they gave all these teams the answers, where my chemistry instructor, and power to him, because I understood after what he did. He says, I could have given you the answers. You'd be working like a multiple choice test. But I wanted to see how good you guys are. We did really, really well. My point is I was capable. I believed people telling me that if you apply yourself and you do well, you can work toward what you want in the future. Merit-based things were merit respected, and that if you planned in your future, you would be able to make a better way for yourself. When I got to the point when that executed, it was all done in the last 6 months. All the letters started coming back. They all came back that because you put this little check mark on white, and believe me, I tried not to put that check mark there when I started to see what was happening. That you put down white, we cannot consider you where you want to go for the money that you need, because I came from a family that was not of great means. The jobs that I'd worked wasn't enough to pay for college. The job I had was not enough to pay for college. And I was bringing, in that time, I was making some really good money for my age and for what I was doing and where I was. As I said, I have never been, there has never been a star, a shiny star that I live under that was good, that helped me. In every instance, I got obstruction to the point that I asked for a transfer from the store that I was working in to another place where the university was so that I can be a working student when all the money because of affirmative action got cut from me. They wouldn't do the transfer. I couldn't even get the company to transfer me to another location. What it was is that they needed me to be in the more heavily used store where I was. I could not break through the affirmative action imposition, and I could never gain the access to the institution that the court dissents here, and the Roberts excuse said that I ought to have even seen. I didn't even get that much. I'm not victimized. It was just what happened. I just could not work out my problems. I wasn't wealthy enough to go to school. I couldn't abandon a well-paying job to go someplace I didn't have a job to go to the university. That made no sense to me at the time. Good, bad, or indifferent on that decision. I was excluded because of affirmative action on the things that I was told if I worked harder, I would get. I may not get the top, but I would get. I would get something for my efforts. Affirmative action got rid of any merit. Absolutely. And it was years later that states started to say that wasn't going to work. So I didn't get the benefit of even the states that decided that wasn't going to be. Again, I'm talking a little bit, maybe much on this. This was a big decision. It's really just, I just want to point out, if we allow conditions to exist without talking, I don't know how many of us that got cut out, like myself, there was a law that most of us could not fix that. We had to go turn different lives. I've said I've been disabled coming down a telephone pole. The rest of my life, and that was early on, was a disability that I could not overcome either. I would not have been coming down that telephone pole if I'd have been in the university getting my degrees. Likely I would have had my master's at that point, and I would have been moving on to a doctorate. I would not have had to change where I was to be on the telephone pole to do something that incapacitated me for the rest of my life. All because of a policy consideration that was figured out 50 years late was invalid. That reverse discrimination is not what you do in a government that says you're not supposed to discriminate. I guess I'll step right there. I'm irritated, I guess, more than anything else. I just think about all of my friends that couldn't get it either. All of us were having to look around in the last moment as well. Could not solve all the obstacles. Where avenues were being shut off, and then finally the doors being closed. Taking second best, going to college, to local colleges that were just not going to, they were never going to get you where you needed to go. I was looking at having to do something in college and university that I couldn't get the experience for by going to work, like a tradesman. And a lot of my friends went that way. In science, I needed to go through the schooling so I understood science. And at that time, it was science. I guess why I can identify why it's not science today. But my avenue, what I strove to do, why I told you I went to Hawaii. And to tell you, and it was kind of a joke, but a sad joke nonetheless. It didn't matter how black I got when I came back from Hawaii. And I was so black my mother didn't recognize me. It didn't matter the color of my skin then. It didn't change those things because I had a little check mark on where it said white and they wouldn't accept other. That I was denied what I wanted to do. How many people in this country were denied? And let me move the extension over a little bit more here, discussion. All of us that could not fulfill our dreams while we were motivated, while we were on the path and speedingly along in our bliss, that wasn't a bad thing. Doing as we could, when we could, did not contribute to the society that to come. That was a whole generation of people that did not contribute the objective basis. That's why I say we become witnesses to this crime against people that allow that objective basis, that actual science training was removed, for my sake, from society to the future, which allows all this consensus knowledge nonsense to come up a decade and a half or so later. How much did our society get harmed alone, let alone what happened to the people that couldn't get to universities because they were so-called white? What harm did that do to society and our contribution? On our degraded, our diminished contribution, where that went. We'll never know. This is injustice that we'll never see remedy. This is what happens in a society that a Supreme Court, of which has equity power to stop the crime as they watch it destroy the society, to stop it, has to wait 50 years before they agree to take a case. And maybe I should just stop because it's going to be repeating. Supreme Court strikes down race-based admissions policies at U.S. universities. Should on its title tell you that it was a wrong thing to do. You're not supposed to use race as a consideration, as the other things that are in the list. And yet this policy went through, taking all this time, the Supreme Court guts affirmative action, effectively ending race-conscious admissions. That word race on this is a stunner. How did this even get here to be a question? On its face, it violated the law. I don't need the Supreme Court to tell me that. Even if it didn't affect me, I don't need the Supreme Court. And I guess I'm saying this. Look at what they're saying. They say here, guts affirmative action. I don't agree with that necessarily gutting. It got rid of it. But they did gut it. They left a small piece of evil. The Supreme Court did. Even though it says it was unlawful, they said, oh, it's still there to be a consideration as long as you can justify over the rest in the spectrum. But that's a high bar. So I'm not so happy with that part. So I want to bring up this title, says the guts affirmative action, because there's a concentrated evil sitting in there to do this. But I'm sure there's lots of people of color. Don't think we're all colored by the law. The extortion, I think they would have a contrary view to mine, I'm sure, but they didn't see how lives were changed, disrupted, derailed in a strictly race-based consideration. Merit went right out the window. And more power to everybody that got in school, because everybody who wanted to should be in school. But to bring people up that really weren't cut for it, maybe that was a disservice to them too. What happened to those people that got in that maybe didn't fulfill, because they didn't have a goal? It just happened to be the thing that they were handed, which is one of the arguments. Well, I think a couple of the jurists, so-called, stated that put a pall, affirmative action put a pall on my capacity. Everyone believed that I was just there because of affirmative action. Just argues for the fact that it was wrong. And it was wrong the moment they started to impose it. And it's not because it came out of just in the 70s. It's when it started to get its teeth. And it's when the federal government started to withhold monies and wait. And see, when you got one set, you got to go to other places. The awards came through. But they were too small. All the federals got cut out. The acceptance by the university that was accredited by the federal for the type of class got cut out. So this was an entire injustice. Affirmative action, so-called, starts back in again in the Civil War times, where they were trying to legislate morality. They're trying to legislate people to accept people that were of color. They didn't understand the law of colorizing everybody. I went to the South. I helped a black man who was my neighbor move there for his final years. He had to tell me, shocking to me, somebody who had no thoughts, no concept. He said, do as I tell you, not as you think. You're going to be offended by what you see here. Do not speak out. When I say, I'll open the door for you, black man's telling me, I open the door for you, just walk in. Don't open the door for me. You're not going to change that sentiment in people with a law. It's a whole different process. That certainly opened my eyes about people. Totally foreign, that idea, because I lived in communities where we had all kinds of people from different parts of the whole world. They came from everywhere. In fact, my high school was all kinds of different people from all over the place. The only time that people would like come together were in gangs. We had gang wars all the time. It was kind of interesting. We called people Mexican then, because that's really where their ancestry came from, not as a derogatory. The blacks, the black gangs, there wasn't this racial idea like they were trying to promote. Anyway, race-based things were illegal from the beginning. Why they took 50 years to get fixed, I don't know. It's not fixed still with this, I guess it's the other part, which people don't quite understand. It's better and easier for me to understand now. I understand we're all colored by the law, and that's not a good thing. We became under the law, and that's manageable by the people that are put in so-called offices of trust to manage us. So essentially now what we see, it just comes striking to me as I'm thinking about all this, all these years coming to, I put it away, you know, you put this stuff away. You can't do anything about it in a way either. I didn't know what to do then to stop the discrimination against me. There was no political sentiment in people anyway at the time. No, we're going to help a certain cause, and we're going to give everybody a hand up, and we're going to knock everybody else that could have gone out. And that's not what was ever said, actually. But what I was, so instead of thinking we were Jim Crowed, and I don't diminish that you were down there in the South to bring this on and the history of that, but to everyone now, when it came to affirmative action, the white so-called. So instead of thinking we were Jim Crowed, we've been Joe Murphy'd by affirmative action. Eddie Murphy'd as late as 1980s, as I did some quick research. Affirmative action wasn't a blackface insult. It's been a whiteface insult. We've been gaslighted into believing whiteface wasn't racist. We've been gaslighted on this stuff for a long time. The instrumentalities of government has been gaslighting us on what our rights would be. We drag our feet as a governmental institution past when everybody would have any memory of it, most of it. Those that have been victimized by it, irreparable harm that will never be corrected, and the society itself in that absence all that time can never see a correction, has been my main problem with the way this United States government works. It's the same culture war that you see, what we see, blackface is bad, but whiteface was okay. It wasn't tied to racism because we had some academics saying that it wasn't. In fact, it was the same violation to us. It took whiteface to be exposed 50 years late. That was another way that they didn't bring it together, so we wouldn't have the contention to out those that used it as a weapon. The earliest use of the term noted by the Oxford English Dictionary is from the New York Clipper in 1870, informing readers that William Joe Murphy has given up minstrelsy to appear on the legitimate boards in whiteface. By 1908, actor Dooley Wilson had earned his nickname for his whiteface impersonation as an Irishman singing a song called Mr. Dooley. The OED also lists the 1947 reference to the black actor Canada Lee performing the role of Bosla in The Duchess of Malfi in whiteface. Just some references. Didn't really think it was anything until I started to realize what it does over 50 years of people being, of society being victimized by an unconstitutional problem, an unconstitutional policy and law and implementation. Anglo-Saxons didn't exist. Cambridge University, I'll move on. Studying the direct predecessors of the English is not anti-racist enough for the university. Cambridge University is teaching students that Anglo-Saxons never existed in the distinct ethnic group in an effort to, quote, dismantle the myths of English nationalism. Well, now I'm going to do global nationalism, I guess. Anyway, the Telegraph reported on Saturday, they say here, the liberal academics have long decried the term for its association with whiteness. And so I'm back to what I had to put a check mark over there. We didn't exist, whether Anglo-Saxon or not, I don't know. But we had to put white. There's no whiteness apparently today in this culture destruction academics today. The statement, the observation of which in the United States has been deemed to be unconstitutional now. But I'm not worried about all that. I just want to know, now that there's no whiteness, now that there's no national identity for whiteness, can we finally get beyond and get done with the white privilege nonsense too, please? Can we drop all this pretense and just start working with each other and try to help each other and forget the color of our skin. Understand we're all colored by a law that wants to extort from us by officials that claim to come in, to protect and secure us. All this deception coming to bear now as they do the polls. Americans maintain historic low in national pride poll finds. I find this interesting. National pride seems to be on the increase, folks. Don't you think? National pride. We have rainbow flags flying at the White House alongside equally the national flag. Pride's doing fine. But what's your opinion of this nation? Do you think? Is it no wonder that we're having a problem with our trust and our confidence and our appreciation and our, if you will, the engendering, embracing what our nation is, especially with this Bidenomics? Hasn't Biden been part of this problem this entire time? No different than a Henry Kissinger? It's fascinating to me what we've watched over all our time, our bliss. You know, they put us on a mission, and I'm fine with that. Get out of my way now. But then you see it a roadblock or they run you off a cliff. Well, you're totally clueless. And he said, well, wait a minute. As I said, where did America go? Where did this America went? It went into these things. It went into people that knew us better than ourselves, that guided our thoughts, that used our integrity, used our focus against us, that used it as a weapon. And when we found out they had the weapon, they denied it. Oh, you can't identify it's a weapon. You can't come into the judiciary and get that decided 50 years later. Well, yeah, no, that was all illegal. That shouldn't happen. Boy, this is going to cause another tumult now that they've flipped that over. So that's a form of a lie. We see as we go on and we get conditioned and things go on, the population mind control, how they work this out, then it gets caught up later. We're here 20-something years later after this little story. How long does it take before our society realizes we need to have answers now? Certainly censorship is another layer of how you keep people dumb, keep information from people, or then convolute it all, put smoke screens around it all. But we start to get the story. We start to get the evidence eventually that we've been conned. John Kerry skewered by French TV hosts. But nothing here in the United States. French TV host, after condemning Putin invasion, why isn't Bush judged in the same way? You have to listen to this discussion. Kerry comes out and says, we didn't do it as a war of aggression in Iraq because we didn't know it was a lie. Which is a lie. Envoy, U.S. envoy admits Iraq invasion was based on a lie. The 2003 war was not a crime because President George W. Bush was never charged, John Kerry has insisted. Now, apply that till today, and you see this corruption going on in this Bidenomics dude, and all the DOJ around that, and all the FBI, all of its no charges. Apply it to this answer here. And also notice that because we sat silent or believed we didn't respond contrary to these interlopers and usurpers inside the system. If you don't charge somebody or you don't set up the complaint, as I've been explaining to you to do, you don't do it. As I said, USC 3 and 4 is there to help put an intercessor in. Oh, the law says I have to do this, and you're the one obligated to take on this thing, and if you don't take it on, then you're a criminal. You do it that direction. If we don't call this stuff out in the proper way, they go out like this, like it removed the lie. Oh, President Bush wasn't never charged. Look at all the crime that goes uncharged in this country. Look at all the crime that goes on that doesn't be found out to be a crime until the so-called statute of limitations is gone, where there's no way to get the justice that's deserved was from the people that were adversely affected, irreparably harmed in a policy decision that went so long. Oh, the war was not a crime because President George Bush was never charged is an interesting addition to lying. It wasn't a war of aggression. We didn't know it was a lie. Listen, first of all, does murder have a statute of limitations? And what about covering up that murder and a genocide with a lie? Are there any factors that might be involved there? Do I need actually find out that someone who caused murder on a lie, who had the obligation to make sure it wasn't a lie, If we live by presumption of innocence, nothing moves until you have the judgment, the lawful judgment, is part of the problem of interfering with other people. Does murder have a statute of limitations, I ask you folks? And speaking of professional liars and how this works, oh, the irony. Harvard scientists faked honesty studies. Harvard University Business Administrator Professor Francesca Gino has been placed on leave after Science Blog accused her of faking a study results. The data integrity blog, Data Colada, published a detailed data integrity blog post, published a detailed examination of Gino's alleged fraud, including falsified study also results found in at least four articles. Three behavioral scientists behind the blog had previously been involved in uncovering falsified data in one of Gino's best-known studies. That study was about honesty. I don't know what more to say, folks. This is academia, lying on its own paperwork about being honest. This is what comes under color of authority and expertism. Our academia is part of the university system and part of what was being used to hurt people in this country from way back when in affirmative action to bring on the type of society you have from the inside. Harvard? Do you think maybe John Kerry was one of those Ivy League schools? Do you think only Harvard has people that do this? If you look in these stories, you see the tale of our own demise right here. All these folks, we can't know anymore. That's why it's so important for you to understand what you're up against. What I try to do, give you a little bit of an eyeball on the path you need to take if you find it interesting, if you find it important, more importantly. You don't start on something you're not interested in for sure. I say you may be careful not to start something that you're already under before you start figuring out if you don't have to, because it's a lot tougher to fight from a position of lack of knowledge while you're being attacked. So I ask us to look ahead, take the notices that we're given, we call it the news, and see who has been doing these deceptions. What has the system that allows this irreparable injustice upon our society to understand we're easily duped, Vince, easily duped. We can be our own good nature used against us. And if we don't come to grow up and take responsibility ahead of time, notwithstanding our past, and make a record, and put that through to someone that has a duty and obligation to do something, not the one that fabricates a duty to harm you, not actually weaponizes something, which is what you have to protect against. You take it under control. Again, get behind the woodshed is you asking the one who did wrong to come and learn a lesson. Hope something I said today helps you out in the future. It gives you a little better insight of what's going on, the global insurrection that's going on against people, and a few things that we might be able to do to isolate ourselves in truth. In function, like I said, species. And I hope that can help us as we start finding out it's a mass deception that's been going on. And there's no remedy for that. There's no remedy to stop it unless we engage quickly in a lot of people seeing it and not just giving lip service to it and letting the other guy do it. I'll be with you next week. Tech Tips from NatureWorld.
Another lesson. I hope with today's information you can take it to those that misbehave. From behind the woodshed, leaving his mark on the beast, this is Hal Anthony. Till next time, journey with purpose.
opening up a can of whoop-ass feels like.
Son, you just opened a whole case of whoop-ass.